Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of Set for Life. My name is Jawanza, and I've got a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous show lined up for you today. I've been waiting for a long time for this show. Once I found out who my guest was going to be this week, I kept saying week after week, oh, I can't wait till the 7th. I can't wait till October the 7th. I'm in the studio with my lovely wife, Yvette.
You mean actually October 6th.
October the 6th. My bad. Okay, I'm thinking about Jawanza for Life. That's tomorrow. Okay. So Set for Life. Sorry, I was waiting for today, the 6th, because I knew when our special guest today was coming on that it was going to be a show that not only I would enjoy, but you as well will enjoy as well. I'm in the studio with my lovely wife, Yvette
Aquia Chef-Nutera. Hello, everybody.
Oh, wow. I can't wait. You just got to hear who I'm coming on. When you hear this bio, it's going to blow you away. Please, Yvette, would you tell them a little bit about our guest?
Yes, our special guest today is Dr. Kenneth Daniels. He is a professor of finance at Virginia Commonwealth University, and he specializes in the areas of financial services and community development. He has presented papers at international conferences such as the International Society for Bayesian Analysis and the European Financial Management Association.
Wow.
And nationally at conferences such as the Financial Management Association and the American Economic Association.
Wow.
He also has been an invited speaker at conferences such as the Institutional Investors America's Government Funds Roundtable.
Okay.
Dr. Daniels has received the Sydney Futures Exchange Prize for the outstanding paper on derivatives and the outstanding paper on investments from the Eastern Finance Association. Dr. Daniels has published over 20 referred articles in journals such as the Journal of Money,
mm-hmm.
Credit and Banking, the Journal of Corporate Finance,
Jeez.
The Financial Review, the Journal of Financial Services Research, the Journal of Fixed Income,
mm-hmm.
the Journal of Economics and Business, Managerial Finance, the Journal of Financial Stability, the Review of Black Political Economy, and the Journal of Real Estate Research.
Hold on, y'all. There's more.
Dr. Daniels is a board member of the Richmond Retirement System, Virginia Community Capital Incorporated, and the Virginia Community Development Corporation. Currently, he is chairman of the Finance Committee for the Richmond Retirement System and Virginia Community Capital. Dr. Daniels also served on the Treasury Board for the Commonwealth of Virginia from 2002 to 2010 and is currently a board member of the Eastern Finance Association. His teaching interests include financial service institutions, municipal bonds, corporate finance, and financial markets. Currently, he is working on service projects that include entrepreneurship, technology, and small business development. He is a member of the Financial Intermediation Research Society, American Finance Association, Financial Management Association, and the Eastern Finance Association.
It's probably easier to tell you what associations he's not a member of than the ones that he is a member of. That is a long list of accomplishments, and I'm sure everybody will agree that it is truly an honor and a privilege to have someone with these credentials take time out of their busy schedule to be on our show. And Dr. Daniels, welcome to Set for Life. Thank you so much for agreeing to be our guest today.
Well, thank you, Jawanza. I was listening to that and saying, well, who is that guy? But it's an honor, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to come out of my my office and my little closed world and share with your listeners and talk about finance, which I think is a fascinating subject, something I think we all could learn more about. And hopefully we'll talk about a lot of topics from financial literacy to entrepreneurship to risk-taking and all the different types of institutions that are available going into the 21st century, because we need to understand the system to take advantage of it to better ourselves and better our society.
You know, about understanding the system. And I think that, when it comes to finance, there are a lot of different systems out here. When it comes to finance, understanding money is a very, very big piece as it relates to, becoming set for life. Everybody wants to be set for life. That's the premise of this show. How do you become set for life? And, you know, a lot of people don't understand money, and as a result of not understanding money, then when it comes to investing or investments, you know, they kind of shy away because there just is not, that understanding isn't there. Would you please talk about the need to understand money, because when you understand money, it removes the fear.
Sure. That's a fascinating question and concept, because there's a difference between, you know, income and wealth. And I think that's kind of, you know, how we can start a nice discussion here, is that, you know, everyone receives income. We all get a paycheck, you know, you have bills, you pay your bills. But the question is, how do you transfer your income into wealth? And that's kind of what really understanding money is all about, because in the United States, we have something here that's called a wealth gap. And it's kind of really interesting. We kind of see that as we see the presidential election playing out here. You know, Romney is kind of the rich kid on the block. Obama's kind of representing the middle class. And you can kind of see this kind of this economic class welfare going on, where essentially Romney is representing the wealth part of society, and Obama's representing the income part of society. And we got to close that gap in terms of getting people to transfer their income into wealth. So, you know, people need to plan, you know, people need to plan and understand that income and wealth are not the same thing. And to get wealth, you know, you need to have a financial plan. You need to understand, you know, the stocks and bonds. And you also need to understand that there are institutions that can help you. You know, so, for example, you know, we know that there is a payday lending society that takes advantage of people. And, you know, it charges rates and returns of 36%. And we want to wean people away from those type of institutions, and we need to develop new institutions that will replace them to help people take care of their day-to-day bills, but also understand their finances so that they can save, and, you know, start going into stocks and bonds and real estates, and hopefully we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Well, Dr. Daniels, can you tell us a little bit of how you got started? How did you, you know, what caused you to get on this path of finance and, you know, all of the accomplishments and things that you've done? What was your motivation? You know, how did you get started?
Oh, well thanks for that. that's you take me way back. But, you know, I grew up modest. You know, I like to tell my friend, I wish I could tell a rags to riches story, but, you know, it's not quite that. But kind of grew up lower middle class up in New Jersey, and, you know, kind of was your typical inner city type of guy. You know, I played sports, always was hungry, and I kind of knew that I wasn't going to make it in sports. You know, I kind of had bad knees, and my jump shot wasn't that good, so I couldn't rely on, you know, the sports to really get me where I need to go. So At a very young age, as early probably as, you know, 18, 19, I knew that I had to get in that classroom and study something that was going to be my meal ticket to kind of take me out of inner city and to get to, you know, institutions like banks, investment companies, and learn the banking system. That's kind of what I decided on, to really, you know, earn my living. And so I had a hunger, you know, once I got to college, which I got to on a scholarship, a basketball scholarship, you know, I started surrounding myself or seeing people that were successful, and you start to see that, wow, this is not that hard, that if I kind of apply myself, I also can be successful. And you start to make friends, and you start to build networks, and you start to have success. And so, you know, I had some early success in economics. I had a nice teacher I went to Fairfield University. His name was Dr. Egdeek, and we would just sit there and talk about economics all day. And he kind of opened my mind to, you know, what was possible. And so, you know, he talked about Wall Street. We talked about working in the banking industry, and that kind of set the seed. So I can remember I was at Fairfield University. It was one summer. And I didn't have any money, and I'm almost going to start crying there, because I thought about it, because I was working as a janitor, and wow, I couldn't even get home. And I said, you know, I want to get to a point one day where essentially that, you know, I have the means to kind of provide for myself in terms of, you know, provide for my family, and getting to a point where, you know, money wasn't an issue. And so, you know, that always, well, even to this day, kind of having that, still still in the back of my mind is saying that, well, even though you have things, they can evaporate very quickly. So you want to make sure that you build a system around you, and that's kind of what we're all talking about here, that you want to make sure that you have a portfolio of a lot of things, you know, your house, your savings account, your education, you know, your job, you know, your support system, your faith. You have to build a range of things around you that support you, that lift you up and not pull you down. And that's what I've been working over the past 30 years to kind of do that economically speaking. And so, you know, that hunger of that day of making sure that that I was able to provide not just for me, my family, is kind of what's been driving me for these 20, 30 years.
But, you know, Doctor, you mentioned something that, you know, you had a hunger, and that hunger actually made you actually go out and actually do something. There are a lot of people who, some might even be listening to this show, that have a desire to achieve, to reach a particular status in life, but they might not have that hunger, because that hunger, when you're hungry, that's going to make you do something to feed that hunger, you know. So you actually went out and you realized that, hey, my meal ticket is not going to be basketball, it's not going to be sports, so I'm going to actually have to apply myself. I mean, you know, you had to study, you know, you had
that's
to
right.
make some sacrifices along the way to, you know, to get the grades that you needed to get to graduate, and upon graduation, and to, you know, dedicate yourself to a particular course of action to, you know, make those dreams reality, to feed that hunger. Can you just even talk about that, just the doing aspect of it, because there are many dreamers out here. Somebody told me once that dreams are for those who sleep, you know. There are many dreamers out here. A lot of us have dreams of becoming wealthy. People dream of hitting the lottery, you know. Mm-hmm. So if you could just talk about the action part of it, because you can think all day long. I mean, but thinking that you're laying on a bed of $100 bills and laying on a bed of $100 bills are two different things. So if you could talk about how that the thought actually translated into action.
Sure. You know, that's one thing of the great thing about being a teacher and acting with young kids is, you know, you get to see their aspiration and goals, and you get to build off their enthusiasm for what they're trying to achieve. So even as you get old, you still are transforming the idea. Exactly what you're talking about. Well, how do you learn and then do? And so for me, you know, it was clear that, you know, a lot of things that we learn early are important, like discipline. So you have to have a certain mindset and discipline to every day you wake up, saying that this is my goal. So you have short term goals and you have long term goals. So what you're going to find is that you're going to hit roadblocks. You're going to have failure. In fact, I remember a statement from Michael Jordan saying that if he wasn't taking risks, if he wasn't failing, then he wasn't pushing himself. So failure is one of the first things that we tell our students, that failure is a good thing. That's how you learn. That if you're just always succeeding, you're probably doing something too easy. So we want to challenge you, and we want to get to the point where we actually make you fail. And when you start to fail, that's when you learn. And so I think a lot of people, they look at failure, and they look at that failure as a negative. And the first thing that I learned is that when you fail, that's a positive. Because, one, now you have an opportunity. Because now it's going to force you to rethink and change your direction and do something different so you don't repeat that action. And so when I was going through my PhD program, and it's interesting, I can remember, you know, talking to professors that were not always positive. And they would say, well, you can't do this. You know, you don't have the ability to do this. And I took that as a challenge. And so even when failure comes from people who are trying to stop you, you have to find a way to remotivate yourself and discipline yourself to change your course of actions to become successful. So the whole thing about getting whether it's a PhD or whether it's publishing an article, if you send out a journal article for Finance Today, the acceptance rate is about 5%. So that means that 95% of the people that are sending an article here to a journal or VCU are getting rejected. But what happens is that when you get a rejection from an article, you don't take that as a failure. You go back, you rewrite it, you look at it again, you add something else, you know, you might do some additional analysis. So it's that whole thing of saying that, you know, I'm gonna dedicate myself, that when I get information, so failure is information, when I get that information, I'm gonna take that and I'm gonna rededicate myself with some discipline to really better myself so I can get to the next level. That's kind of how I view it.
You know, and it seems like when you talk about failure being a good thing, the people have to know that, like, it's like you may have seen a fight, a prize fight, heavyweight fight, where one of the participants gets knocked down, but they get up and win the fight. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Now, it depends on your attitude once you encounter that failure. You know, like you say, it can break you, or, you know, it can make you actually go back, reevaluate, you know, maybe redirect your focus, do some things a bit differently, and, you know, keep moving forward, you know. And that's the thing. Go ahead, Seth.
And I thought it was very, you know, good what you also brought up, the point that, you know, you begin to associate or surround yourself with successful people, people that also had dreams and aspirations like you, and even being in the classroom, like you said, being in that type of environment where you see people have goals. So, you know, we also want to pick back up on this, the goals and establishing goals and then working towards, achieving those goals. And as you go from one step to another, then that just opens up other opportunities and doors open up to you.
And a lot of people are just walking. That's a good point, Yvette. Because when you surround yourself with people, synergy or just something that is a magnetism. I mean, you kind of can glean from other people and they wear off on you, or you can kind of pick up some traits. And when you're walking in that positivity, you expect things. Somebody said once, you don't necessarily get in life what you want, but that you get what you expect. And if you've ever seen successful people, there are sometimes successful people, they just act like they know that this door is going to open for them. There's no doubt. There's no fear. You know, it's like approaching a situation. I know I'm going to get the job, or I know I'm going to get the result that I want. And that could come from, you know, just surrounding themselves with other positive people, positive, like-minded thinking people that wears off on you. Can you talk about just the need to be positive and to surround yourself, have a network, a social circle of positive people?
Sure, you're on a great point, because it's all about expectations. You know, we have a statement in finance. We say that expectations are self-fulfilling. So if you feel you're going to succeed and you set your expectations in arrangement that you're going to get there. And just like to take off on, you know, maybe kind of like another point, like our children. You know, this whole idea of financial literacy and tying our kids into the system where they understand money and things like that, that's important, because the more that they're comfortable with money and have expectations about money, that they're going to gravitate towards it. And so, you know, it's important to, at a very young age, to teach your kids about, you know, bank accounts, to teach them about, you know, stocks and bonds and things like that. And so, as you're saying, so, you know, when you start to have expectations for yourself, and you start being around people that have expectations, whether it's professionally or individually, but we'll focus on the professional, you start to see that certain people have, you start to say, well, why is this guy setting these goals so high? Or why is he doing this in terms of assuming that he's going to be able to see an area that's very difficult? Because it's a reward. So the whole point is that when you have expectations and you start to work hard, there's a reward. And so that's one of the things that we're starting to see that's kind of interesting in our society. Now we have unemployment at 8.1%.
Wow.
Those jobs are not coming back. And so people are going to have to reevaluate their expectations about what does it mean to be successful and what's the reward. That corporate job of, let's say, you know, whether it's General Motors or GE, you know, where you're going to be there and you're going to be set for life, stay at the company for 30 years, those days are over. So we need people to set their own expectations, they have to be comfortable with taking risks, they're going to have to create their own jobs, they're going to have to be entrepreneurs, they're going to have to understand the financial system, this doesn't have to be very big, whether it's something, and this is all over the world, we're starting to see people take responsibility for their own expectations and place in life. And so in Bangladesh, there's a bank called Grameen Bank. And essentially what they do is that they give small microloans as small as $500 to merchants and peddlers, and they just make sure that they are going into a good investment and that they're going to pay that $500 back over whether it's a 1 month period, 2 month period. But the whole point is that these people now have some expectations about how they're going to improve their lot in life. And so no matter that, whether it's $500, $5,000, or $5 million, the whole point is that you have to take responsibility, expect something, take risk, and live with the consequences. And so we're now at the point now in the U.S. that as we start to, you know, think about where we are economically, a lot of people are not ready for this.
Okay.
And so it's a point where now we have to educate, and that's the good thing about being a professor and the things that you're doing is that we have to actually change the mindset and the behavior of a whole population of people to get them ready for the transformation that we're going to see in this global economy is coming. And so I did some traveling to China and Australia, and that world is becoming much more competitive, and eventually those people are not going to stay there. They're coming here, or their products are coming here.
Mm-hmm.
And so essentially, you know, we have to get us ready where we have to raise our expectations about what we're going to do from an economic standpoint to deal with this additional risk that's coming our way.
You know, that's a very good point because, like you mentioned, there are going to be a lot of people that are coming to the United States and they're being educated and they are ready. And if we don't step up to the plate, if we don't have the education, hey, there are jobs that would normally be, you know, for an American, but now you can't get it because they're not qualified and there's no one to fall. Yeah.
And not only ready, like you said, when they come, they start the businesses, you know, they take advantage of all the resources that's available to start a business, and they bring that family and let that family be a part of it. And I guess because they know basically where they're coming from, maybe the advantages or disadvantages, and they can recognize opportunities.
Yes.
And that's what we need to be able to do. We need to be able to recognize those opportunities and begin to, you
take
know,
advantage of them while they're available.
Could I just throw something in there with that?
Absolutely.
Could I just talk about two types of institutions that people that might not be aware of that are kind of, again, it goes with this whole idea of kind of learning about the system and what are the opportunities and what you should be looking at. And one is something called a – so most time we think of the financial system, we just think of there's banks, you know, there's investment companies. It's changing so rapidly that we're getting away from this old traditional financial system. We kind of have a, you know, there's a very non-traditional one, and then this one that's kind of evolving that hopefully maybe we could talk about another time, which is private equity and venture capital and all those things. But there's something called a CDFI, and that's called a Community Development Financial Institution. And it was this idea first came from Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was a great president. He kind of realized that, you know, we have to kind of be innovative in finance to get finance to all communities. And so he recognized that the traditional banking system, which is, you know, the Wachovias, the SunTrust, you know, the Bank of Americas, that they're focused pretty much on middle America, and they're not gonna really take as much risk as they probably should. And we could try to force them, but they're not gonna get there. So he developed something called Community Development Financial Institution. It's not a bank, but essentially it's meant to lend to the more risky parts of the economy. So when you go to a bank and you get rejected, you can go to a CDFI and get a bank loan because they're not a bank, they can take on a little bit more riskier loan and offer a little bit better rate. The terms will be more favorable. And because they're more favorable, it's more likely that you're going to be successful. Now, I work for one here in Virginia, and actually two of them, but one of them is called Virginia Community Capital, and that's something that your listeners could look up. And their job is to fill the niche that the traditional banking community is not filling. And so they're supposed to take on riskier loans. They're supposed to take a look at things that are more non-traditional. So whether you're going to open, you know, a restaurant, or whether you're going to try to do a real estate development project, this CDFI allows you to take on that riskier project to, you know, which a bank may not do. And so a lot of people may not know about that. And there's CDFIs all over the country. And they do microfinance, they do small business loans, they do real estate loans. But this is where the action is, that if let's say you've been working for a long period of time and you now have developed some wealth where you want to take on risk and you want to do a real estate project or you want to open a company, you have to realize that maybe the bank is not the best place. And so there are other places to go that will help you. You know, a lot of people say SBA, that's true, but a lot of SBA loans are not for risky loans either, because they have to be guaranteed. And you have to have collateral, which means that you've got to put up your house. Well,
you have to be business for like 3 years before you can even apply, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. So what we're finding is that, you know, as we start talking about this whole population of, you know, the 8.1% unemployment or the 47% that Mr. Romney's talking about, those people are going to have to learn about the traditional and the non-traditional in terms of trying to, you know, get started. Because if they can't, you know, if you can't go to corporate America and get your job, you're going to have to create your own job. And that's going to have to start talking about risk-taking and finance and try to think about how you can go to these CDFIs, these other institutions that a lot of people don't know about. And so one of the things that's kind of interesting, I kind of sit on these board meetings. They said, well, you know, we can't find the people. They don't exist. And I've been living in this society for a long time. I know they're there, you know, and, you know, you have to be – and timing is very important. You have to be careful with the message that you bring, because sometimes they shoot the messenger.
That's true.
So, you know, but there's going to be a time where essentially that hopefully that that when I find that, you know, particularly this region is ready to say that, well, you know, these people are here. And whether it's Central Virginia or Northern Virginia, that, you know, that that the entrepreneurs are there and that they understand the risk that they take and they're prepared to take on this challenge that the CDI is meant to present to them. And to me, there's a disconnect, because right now we're seeing that we have the CDFIs here and the people aren't coming to them in probably the way they should to get the financing they need. And so either A, the people don't have the entrepreneurial spirit or background to pull it off, so therefore it's a demand issue, or the CDFIs are not supplying the funds to the right population. And it's probably a combination of both.
Well, you know, I would advise people who are listening to really, really take advantage of this information, because, I mean, certain programs that if they now is this government funded? Because I'm thinking if there are certain programs that aren't being utilized, they cut. You can't just assume it's going to be there forever. Is this government funded? You say the president set it up, so my guess is that.
This is not government funded. This is these are private. These are essentially public-private partnerships.
Okay.
You know, the bank that I'm talking about, it was actually started by Mark Warner, and essentially, again, Mark Warner, great governor, and he took $7 million, and he used as equity to start this bank, and then he formed it with all these other public entities. And it became a private institution. And that's the whole thing. And then this private institution leverages debt and deposits to make loans. And now this bank is a very special type of bank. But this bank is not supposed to compete with traditional banks. It's supposed to make loans to an area that the banks will not accept, which is supposed to be riskier. And that's another interesting story for another time. But, you know,
going to ask you, what's the default rate? I mean, because the loans are riskier, so I would imagine that the default rate might be a little higher.
Well, you would think in theory, but right now it's not.
The
default rate essentially we have is like 1%.
Wow.
And so, but again, that's because that you may not be going after the targeted population, which was intended. The intention was that, you know, this has been done in North Carolina. There's a bank in North Carolina called Self Help, and it was aimed at the Latino community. And essentially what they did is they said, well, traditional banks are not lending to the Latino community, and this actually was a credit union. So they set up this credit union, and essentially this credit union lent to the Latino community. It's now one of the biggest success stories in this CDFI area. Because now, as you know, the Latino community is the fastest-growing segment of the U.S. population. They're very entrepreneurial, so they're opening businesses, they're doing houses, and this is stabilizing the North Carolina economy. So something that would have been a negative, because if the additional bank didn't lend to them, this has been a neglected population. Crime would have went up. It had been an eyesore. There had been disinvestment. Now, this has turned out to be a very positive thing, where essentially that's a very healthy part of North Carolina economy. We should have something similar here in Virginia. But, again, it's not getting as much traction as it probably should in terms of, you know, targeting certain populations. But hopefully, you know, like talking like this, people learn about it, and it's something where, you know, people start to gravitate towards it. But, you know, kind of getting back to, you know, what Mark Warner wanted, I think what he intended was essentially was this to cater to this underserved population. You know, underserved or disadvantaged, that's a huge number, you know, because that could be women.
Yeah,
it could be
true.
Minorities. It could be immigrants. It could be income-based. So there's so many ways that if you're quote unquote in this disadvantaged population, there's something for you, which is not a government run program. But if you don't know about it, then essentially you're not going to take advantage of it.
Wow. So I was just going to say, if you're a woman and a minority, that doubles your chances of.
It doubles your chances. That's what we call it, the double minority.
Well, why do you think that these programs that people don't know about it? It seems like the funds, the grant funds and programs like this, I mean, it's very hard to find that information out. Why do you think that these programs are not, I mean, people just don't know about them?
Well, part of it is education, and part of it is there's a, you know, things are kind of done, you know, a certain way. You know, there's certain networks. Space life is complicated. You know, there, you know, is, you know, people have networks, and you know, you got to be in the network. And so if you're not in the main, this is meant, and that's the whole point. This is really meant to satisfy the mainstream. And so if for some reason you're not in that mainstream, or you're not in these financial networks, you don't learn about these things. And usually what happens is that, let's be honest, that who really takes advantage of this program are people that already have money. So the people that have money, they know this.
right.
Yeah.
And they're taking full advantage of it. And so they get bigger and bigger. And then the programs that are meant to serve those that are smaller, they kind of get squeezed out, because now, you know, let's be honest, if I have a chance to lend to a big guy that I know I'm going to get paid back, he has experience, I'm going to start looking at the disadvantaged population with more scrutiny. And if I can avoid it, I would. It's common sense. Why would I want to go somewhere where my likelihood of success is less? It's going to take more time. You know, the amount of time it's going to take me to underwrite that same loan is going to be the same. So that's why we get this whole thing of redlining. That, you know, whether it's insurance or whether it's, you know, lending, they avoid problem areas because they know that, you know, these people are not experienced and they're not taking advantage of the opportunity. So redlining is illegal, okay, but we know it happens. And so we start to see that, you know, you have these communities are kind of circle with a circle around them, you know, whether it's a finance desert or food desert, we find that big organizations avoid them legally. And they shouldn't be. And that's why we have things like CRA, which is the Community Reinvestment Act, which forces these traditional banks to go in there and offer something. But it's peanuts. And so we got to wake up and say, okay, we now know that we are a community, or that we're a particular organization, and we're going to be able to take advantage of not just the traditional system, but there's also some things which are non-traditional that are allowed to kind of meet our goals as a community, as an individual. And people have to do their homework to find that these things are out there. And that's just one example. You know, another one is this, I'll give you another one, if I could plug another one of my groups.
It's
called the Virginia Community Development Corporation, and they do economic development. And this Wednesday, on October 24th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., they're offering a course on multifamily real estate development and finance. And it's at Mary Washington College,
mm-hmm.
and it costs $50. But this is kind of a situation that, let's say, you know, you think your family finances are stable, and you think you're ready to take on a little bit more risk, and you want to do some real estate development. You want to get into owning homes and renting them out, multifamily. They will take you through the feasibility of doing the project. They'll take you through the whole idea of understanding the local market. They'll show you how to prepare the budget. They'll identify the financing sources, like some of the things that we just talked about. Sometimes they will finance. Sometimes they'll show you where the government finances. And then they'll show you how to do the marketing for your project. So these are things that they're looking for. So the whole point is that they assume that when you come to them that you're already prepared. And when you're not prepared, then you're just – you're not wasting their time, but you're creating more work for them. So that's why these type of courses are very important, because you've already done your homework. And so then you kind of say that, wow, first of all, do you want to do it? And then you have to get more sophisticated. So people, even at the basic level, bankers and development corporations are looking for sophisticated people. And they want to know you've done your homework, you have an idea about a project, and then you come prepared to execute. And they'll help you get there. But they're only going to spend their time on people that they know are probably going to be successful. Now, they can't turn you away, but again, they're not going to start targeting their resources on you until they know that you probably have some background, like these courses, and that you have some idea what you're doing in terms of you know, developing projects or opening companies and stores.
Do you need a business plan? I mean, is that something that somebody listening out there might expect to be asked of them if they decide to go that route?
Absolutely. You know, they want to know that you, one, that you're a good risk, that you, you know, you kind of developed your business plan. You might have had, you might have done some past projects. Not that all your projects have been successful. And it's another key point I like to maybe put in the minds of listeners, that when you're doing these projects, and this is what we find of a lot of people that are successful, that it's not necessary that you do it alone, and that it's good to start thinking about how you can partner with other people to become larger. And as you get together and you find that, you know, you can find, bring another partner into the project, that's going to increase your chances, because you're probably going to have the finances of one, two, even three people. And so, you know, when you start thinking about doing some of your whether it's opening a store or opening a real estate project, sometimes a partnership is a better way to go than just an individual. And that's part of doing your homework. So when you're out and you're going to your meetings, and whether you're, you know, going to a restaurant and you're networking, you want to start trying to identify people that maybe you want to do business with. And who can you work with? Because you can't work with everybody. And so it's important that when you're in these social settings, this is all part about the networking aspect of it. When you're networking, hopefully you're not just talking about the baseball game and talking about, Virginia Tech. You want to start identifying people and say that, if I ever got some funds and I was able to do a project, I could work with that guy. And then by doing that, you're going to find that by building those partnerships, you're going to draw from his strengths and your strengths. So if you can come together as a team and focus on a target, that's going to make you very attractive to lenders. Okay. Because they can say, wow, these guys did their homework. And now we don't just have the risk of one guy, we got two. Mm-hmm. And we diversify the risk. And so that's what makes things successful. So it's very important for small business, particularly, because a small business is no longer maybe just a mom and pop shop. You know, it could be 50 to 200 people, or, you know, a real estate project. You know, $1 million is nothing. So doing $1 million with one person and $1 million with two people, that really helps you get over the hump.
But what about somebody who says, Professor, that, you know, hey, I did that partner thing before. I tried it. You know, it didn't work out. You know, my partner was an egghead, and, you know, we just all the time, you know, and we ended up having to dissolve the business. You know what I mean? What would you say to that?
I would say find another one. You know, there are tons and tons of good people out here. But we don't think in those terms. So what we find is that, you know, most successful small businesses have good partnerships, because, you know, let's face it, if you're a one person shop and you get sick, you know, that's it.
Good point.
You know, so but I understand your question. You know, it's hard to you know, find
trust
people who have, you know, same skill sets or personalities. So And that's the whole point. The reason we don't see it is that it's not easy. You know, it's hard to kind of get people together that are kind of on the same page, have the same skill sets or different skill sets that complement each other, that kind of builds a team that can be successful. But, you know, when we take a look at successful businesses, we find that, you know, you know, people have, you know, different levels of educations and different backgrounds. You know, you might have a business guy packaged with a technology guy, or you might have a marketing guy, a retail guy packaged with a finance guy, and then, okay, that's a good team. Because I can say when I look at the skill set, I understand that the finance guy is going to take care of the back office, and this guy that's doing the retail is going to be out there trying to drive the revenue. And so that's another aspect of it.
Balances and making sure that, you know, things are, you know, legally structured, you know, to protect everybody's interest. And I think sometimes, too, when you're talking about partnerships, people think in a business corporate type of, you know, partnership. But you're also talking about just maybe for a project or maybe for this particular project, because I'm sure Donald Trump and people like that, they had to partner with other people a lot of times, especially in the beginning, to do some of these, mega deals that they've,
exactly.
Done.
Yeah.
Can we keep talking about partnerships?
By the way, I want to make sure I give the number in the studio. If you have questions for Professor Daniels, you'd just like to join the conversation, please feel free to give us a call at 347-324-5727. That's 347-324-5727. Professor Daniels, could you talk about momentarily the election? Okay, we've got President Obama versus Mitt Romney. And, you know, I've heard people say, you know, that during the past 4 years, you know, certain segment of society say, well, nothing's changed for me. You know what I mean? Obama is president and nothing's changed. Could you talk about the need? You talked about it briefly earlier, just taking responsibility for your own life. Because, I mean, I'm sure there are people, entrepreneurs and people who have actually gotten wealthy under Republican presidents. You know, it's not like just because a Democrat is in office that you're going to succeed, and if a Republican's in office, you're going to go bankrupt. You know, so could you talk about just the need, talk about that personal responsibility again? Because what if, just hypothetically, for the sake of discussion, what if President Obama is not reelected? Does that mean that for the next 4 years or eight that, you know, you're not going to prosper? Does that mean that you can't become a millionaire or a billionaire in the next 4 to 8 years because a Democrat's not in office? So could you talk about personal responsibility and not just relying on whoever's in office to, you know, get you to where you're trying to go?
Sure. Yeah, I know this is a very distinct choice between President Obama and Mitt Romney, but in my personal view, in terms of the economics, it doesn't matter. We're at the point where essentially, you know, coming up to something called the fiscal cliff, and corporations are kind of holding back on decisions of hiring till we kind of get past the election, and then we have to find out what we're going to do with the deficit in terms of scaling this $1 trillion deficit we have. So whether it's Obama or Romney, people need to realize it kind of goes into a larger discussion that we were talking earlier. Is that this 8.1% unemployment is going to be around for a while, and so that's the Federal Reserve is kind of showing that probably to about 2014, even 2015, we're going to be in a slow growth economy, regardless of who's president. So with that in mind, that shows that you're going to have to essentially take responsibility of your job prospects, and essentially we're going to go to a situation where most of the job growth is going to come from small business, and a lot of it's going to be driven from companies overseas. So it's going to be globally competitive. So you're going to have to, you know, think out the box and say that, well, you know, in the past when we had a pretty fast growing economy, you could think of, you know, opening, you know, a drugstore in the corner or a restaurant on the corner, and you wouldn't get competition from, a Walmart or something like that. But in a global economy, even a small business is competing with big business.
Okay.
Or, you know, if you're a little local used car lot, you're competing against CarMax. You're competing against a national corporation that's competing with the local economy because they're trying to get every dollar they can. That's how bad it is for them also. So what that entails is that, you know, all the things we've been talking about, one, education pays off. You know, high school degree is not going to work. So you got to, you know, think, okay, how am I going to get some training? Go to community colleges, go to your local universities, get trained in some discipline that you think you want to go into. Second thing is that whether you are doing retail or any business, it's going to take some risks. So you're going to have to learn about stocks and bonds and balance sheets and income statements and all those things there. And so so we're going to find that as we get into this election of Obama and Romney, that it's going to matter in terms of who's preferred, because clearly President Obama will probably favor more small business. You know, Romney kind of disagree with that. But again, he's pretty much shown that, you know, he's the president for big business. And so we're going to find that essentially that's not going to matter to small business per se, because you're going to have to fend for your own.
Well, let's talk, if we would. We've got about 15 minutes left, and I encourage everybody, if you buy a phone, you want to pick it up and call 347-324-5727. And I just want to say to everybody that's listening, first of all, thank you for your support. You know, going back and looking at the archives, and people are listening and tuning in. Thank you so much for listening. But it's a talk radio show. You can talk, too. So give us a call, 347-324-5727. And my special guest today is Professor Daniels. He, as you can see, is the man. He knows his stuff. He's a professor at VCU, and he's got a long, long history of, I mean, if you didn't tune in at the beginning to hear his bio, you need to go back and listen to it. This is not somebody who's new to this, and so just you're listening to an expert, and so we want you to make sure that if you got any questions or we have him on the line, you can talk to him right now. Talk about risk, if you would. I mean, because there are people out here that say that stocks, investing in stocks and bonds is too risky, but they'll buy a lotto ticket. And the odds of them hitting the lotto are far greater than if they were to invest in stocks and bonds. Could you talk about risk and how we do take risks every day, but when it comes to, say, stocks and bonds, we kind of shy away from it, from the average person. But
sure.
You know, those that are wealthy, if you look at their portfolios, they have a large, stock and bond holding as well as real estate.
Mm-hmm. Sure. I remember when I was at the Federal Reserve and I was kind of reading these studies on wealth and income, and it was really interesting. And so when you kind of take a look at the population, you find that there's this big thing called the wealth gap that, you know, and it's not. It turns out to be a classification on race, but that is not important, because clearly, you know, how the wealthy are managing their balance sheets, and the Fed actually studies this by a study called the Survey Consumer Finances, that, you know, the wealthy, they have pretty much, and I'm talking about the average person, so you take the average wealthy person to the average non-wealthy person, and clearly the average wealthy person has, you know, positive net worth. He's invested in stocks, bonds, real estates, and has good health care. You know, and when you take a look, so in order to get that, that means that, one, this person, you know, as he's kind of developed over his life, the average person, 45, whatever, somehow he's delayed his consumption to pretty much go into these riskier assets, you know, going out and buying corporate bonds or buying treasury bonds or buying stocks and bonds. And then when you take a look at the average person who's about 45, who's not wealthy, and again, taking race out of the equation for now, it's fascinating that you can say that, wow, that a huge segment of population that they have zero or negative wealth. And that's it's alarming. So, but you know, if you ride around, you know, you kind of see this. You can kind of identify areas that have zero or negative wealth. And clearly, when you take a look at the balance sheet, you know, they don't have stocks, they don't have bonds. But we do find that, you know, some of those people do have real estate. And so we find that, you know, when you start to look at investments, and this is where race does turn out to be a factor, that African Americans have a tendency to ignore stocks and bonds and invest primarily in real estate. And that's interesting, because if that's the case, that means that the stock market boom from the 90s to 2000, let's call it just for a crash, 2007, that they missed that entire bull run in the stock market, which exacerbates this whole wealth gap that we're talking about. Because if people invest in stock and bond markets, and stock and bond markets grow at 10% per year, in 10 years they pretty much have doubled their money. Whereas if you don't participate in that, then essentially you're left out of that and you've not doubled your money. And so now that leaves you at a disadvantage to that population of doing all the things that we talked about earlier, because now they've accumulated this wealth and their balance sheets have grown, whereas at probably at best your balance sheet has kept up with inflation or grown a little bit more than that. You know, you might have grown at 2-3%, and they've grown
right.
at 10%.
Well, I think
so,
part
you know,
of that.
That's, go sorry,
ahead,
go ahead.
I'm sorry. No,
so this whole thing of risk, so you kind of position a risk. So we teach this whole thing of kind of, you know, to really get comfortable with this risk, you really need to understand that, well, you know, a bond is just an IOU. So pretty much there, I'm almost guaranteed I'm going to get my money back because I'm going to get some coupons over time, and then I'll get my principal back. If I sell that bond for maturity, I could lose it, but if I hold it to maturity, I'm pretty much going to get all my money back. So, you know, there's ways that you can go into riskier assets once you know them and protect yourself. And, of course, once you go into stocks, that's a different ballgame. But even there's ways to use mutual funds and what we call exchange-traded funds, things that have different risks, that you can manage that risk. And you can start to get more comfortable with it in terms of making sure that you're getting the return you need to grow this balance sheet that we're talking about.
You know, I think, Professor, that part of the reason that the, you know, African Americans invest primarily in real estate and not stocks and bonds is because, at least with real estate, they can see their money. You know what I mean? They can see where their money is. They can see this house that they're walking into, the driveway that they park their car in. You know, they can see it. Whereas stocks and bonds, I'm saying you can still see how your investment is doing, of course, but it's not like tangibly walking into somebody's home or, you know, you invest in a car. You can see the car in the driveway, you know, and I guess with stocks and bonds, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that, you know, once you invest in it, once you put down that, let's say, hypothetically, $10,000 investment, mm-hmm. that you've invested it, and there's really nothing at this point that you can do personally to affect that that position, whether it increases or whether it decreases. Is that correct?
Exactly right. That's the whole understanding of the contract. It's a contract. And so you put your eggs down, and it's a possibility of gain, a possibility of loss. Now, one thing I will say now, in some ways, it is tangible, but it's not visibly tangible. So these are all tangible investments where you'll get some type of documentation that says that you have this ownership. So, you know, another thing is a lot of times a lot of these things are done electronically. So you can look at your dollar amount every day. You know, you just have to go online, look at the computer, or you need to check your documents at the end of each month or every quarter when they send you something. So it is tangible, but it's a different type of tangibility. It's not a physical tangibility like you're saying, that you can look and you can see that when my house is red or it's brick, and I know that, well, I'm in a good neighborhood, and I feel good about it, so 5 years from now, it's probably going to go up in value. But a lot of people got burnt from that story too, right, because it went the opposite. Well, we had a real estate bubble, and so it went down in value. So that shows you there's a double penalty there because people did not diversify. So we had this community that was primarily in one asset, and because they weren't diversified, and when the real estate bubble burst, you know, in particular communities, they lost 50% of their wealth.
Right.
So now that's interesting because now that means that those people that are concentrated like that, you know, it's going to take a long time just to get back to even.
Wow.
So all things we're saying is that if you diversify and you kind of learn about stocks and bonds and you put, you know, a little bit in those things and you're diversified, and then, you know, you even take on some more risk and take on a business, something like that. What studies show that on average or the long haul, you're going to be better off.
And so this is talking more about long-term investments, something not short-term, but something that you're investing in for your future and for it to grow, not something to just kind of, you can't, you know, really to see your profit, you can't just cash in, you know, once you make that investment. Is that correct?
Exactly right. We're talking, you know, probably 5 years or more. You know, so this is not the type of investment you're going to make to say, well, I'm going to plop this down and then 3 years from now, I'm going to take it out, because we know that things are volatile. You know, which is good example. People now talk about what should we do about real estate investments today? Is real estate a good investment or a bad investment? And so a lot of people saying, well, prices have come down and more affordable, and so therefore, I should go into real estate. Well, if that's true, you want to make sure that when you make that real estate investment, that's a long-term investment. So you're not going to be trying to sell that real estate investment, 2-3 years from now. At a minimum, you might say that, well, if I'm going to buy some investment real estate, we're talking 5 years from now or 10 years from now, because real estate only improves as inflation becomes a factor. And we've had inflation that's been pretty mundane here, that we don't have any inflation. So until we start get the economy growing again and people will have jobs and people can start paying more for houses, that's the only time that a real estate investment is going to really get better. And we don't see that happening anytime soon. So, it's kind of going back to this whole Obama-Romney thing, is that until we get the right guy in that White House that kind of says, okay, we're going to solve the budget deficit, we're going to get over the fiscal cliff, business people become confident again, and then we start getting the economy going again, and corporations start hiring, real estate's going to be pretty slow investment. And then on the other side, there's a good chance they may screw it up. And then we have to talk about, well, maybe the U.S. economy won't have, 4%. We may never see 4%, 5% growth for the next 10 years if they screw this thing up. And that's the type of growth that we need. That's the type of growth that we need in the economy to get this unemployment rate down from 8% down to 5%. We need to grow it 4-5%.
4-5%. So
per year.
Even when you're talking about bonds and stocks, the economy, all of that is still based upon the economy, the state of the economy, or how corporations and how people are getting jobs and things like that too. Is that correct?
That's right. So, all these things are interdependent. We're talking about your investment. So, stock market has been stuck on this 13,000 because the economy's not growing. And so until we kind of get this engine going again, it's going to hurt all of us.
Professor, do you give lectures and workshops? Because there might be somebody out there listening that loves what they hear, and they would love to, maybe get in contact with you, see how they could get you to come out and speak, or, somebody in the area, or somebody might, depending on where they are. I mean, is that something that you do?
Yeah, I like to get out of office. I'm more of the behind-the-scenes kind of guy, but I'm looking to, over the next couple of years, become a little bit more community engaged. So if anybody would like me to come to speak, I like that opportunity.
Okay. Can you give information where how they can reach you?
Sure. You can reach me by email. And so the
okay.
name is Ken Daniels, and the email is kndaniel@vcu.edu. So that's kndaniel@vcu.edu. And if I could plug my website, my academic website,
yes.
Kind of get some benefits if the number of hits goes up. It's the website is ssrn.com.
Okay.
And that stands for the Social Sciences Research Network. And then you would just have to put in my name, Daniels, and you see Ken Daniels pop up, and then you can see all the work that I've been working on lately.
Hey.
Wow.
And I encourage people to go out to your website and do that to support, you and, all of the things that you're doing, and even all of the information that you shared today about the
so wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, about the I was taking my notes. the CDFI and
awesome.
This information is out there like you shared with us today, but a lot of times just like you said, the wealthy is the ones that have the information. And sometimes they don't want to tell you where they got the information from, but here on Seth for Life and Juwan's for Life, that's what this show is all about. We want to educate and inform people and let them know, that this information is out there, that things are out there to help you be successful. I did have one more question as we get towards the end. Just not taking it for granted that people understand what wealth is. Professor Daniels, what do you consider wealth? What actually is wealth?
Well, wealth, first of all, is if you wake up in the morning and you're breathing and you got 2 feet on the ground, you're wealthy. but but from a financial standpoint, wealth is where essentially where it's where essentially is your income is in some asset that's earning some type of return that if you need to, you can go sell it. So it's delayed consumption. So wealth is when you delay your consumption, it leads to a stream of money over time, which we call savings. And so very simply put, you can take that savings and you can go down to the bank and you can put it in a CD. And so when times get bad, you want to make sure that you have a pot of wealth that you can go to and liquidate to pay for future consumption or for future needs. So wealth pretty much is any asset that over time grows and allows you to liquidate it in a time of need. And that can be stocks, bonds, real estate. It can be commodities. It can be, in some ways, it can be your business, per se, if you're that. But what it is not your paycheck.
Okay. Y'all better listen. It's not your paycheck.
Or living paycheck to paycheck.
Okay.
That's right.
Professor Daniels, this has been a fast hour. I mean, I've totally enjoyed this information.
I
can tell you, Vets enjoyed. She's been sitting up here taking notes like just gobbling it all up. Any closing remarks for our listeners, those who have tuned in, anything that you'd like to get across to our listening audience before we leave? And we'll have to see if we can have you back because we've got a lot more to cover. So anything as we close this segment, anything you'd like the listeners to know?
Well, I just say that this is the decade of economic opportunity. I think we're going to find that once we get behind this economic stagnation that we've currently been experiencing, that we're probably going to go through a period of growth that we've never seen before, and we're going to be astounded. So it's important to get prepared, get positive, get your education ready, get your balance sheets ready, and get in a positive mindset to take advantage of opportunities that are going to come, and be prepared to think out the box. You know, that old economy is gone, and the new economy is going to be much more flexible, it's going to be much more diverse, it's going to be much more entrepreneurial, and so therefore it's going to reward people that are willing to take risk and are willing to take advantage of it.
So this is the time to get ready. This is
time
to
get ready.
Wow, Dr. Daniels, this has truly, truly been an awesome, awesome interview. I know that we're going to go back and listen to this over and over again. brother, we have to see if we can have you back because this was just food, and I'm full.
Yeah.
I've totally enjoyed it. This has been a delicious meal, brother. Thank you. And for all of the listeners that have listened in today, thank you so much. You could be doing 1,000 things, but you've chosen to tune in and listen to Set for Life. And I'm so very, very, very grateful. Professor Daniels, I wish you nothing but the best moving forward, sir. We're going to be in contact with you to see if we can schedule another one. I know you're a busy guy, but with this information, you know, we've got to see can we have you back so we can get fed some more.
Well, thank you, Jamal. I appreciate it very much, and thank you for the opportunity. And thank you, Yvette.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, for bye everybody bye. Who's been listening, that was Professor Daniels, Professor Kenneth Daniels of VCU. Oh, my God. Yvette, was that an awesome interview?
Yes, it was.
I have truly, truly been fed today.
Absolutely, and this is the kind of information that people like Professor Daniels and a lot of other people that we bring on the show that we want to give to our listeners. You know, we
That's
want
right.
to give you this information because the information is out there. And once you, you know, get this information, take it
mm-hmm.
and do something with it, you know,
That's right.
because it's available. And I just found it very interesting how he was just saying that, you know, this is the time to get ready. This is, you know, an opportunity to educate and glean
mm-hmm.
and learn and take this information and make a change.
And you won't be able to say that after you've heard this show, you won't be able to say that you didn't know. After you hear shows on Set
yeah.
for Life, you will not be able to say that I didn't get the information in time to take advantage of it. Now the food is on your plate. The question is, are you going to eat it or are you going to sit there and look at it? The choice is yours. You can be set for life but there are things that you have to do to be set for life. You're not going to become set for life by looking at the food on the plate. You got to pick up the fork, stick it in the food, lift the fork to your mouth, and dig in and digest it. Okay, there's a process. You know, there's something that you have to do, and you can do it. You have the smarts. Now's the time. You have the support system. You can tune into this show every week and hear from somebody else telling you how you can become set for life.
And you said the support system, and like you said, you know, connecting with people that have that same mindset. You know, you may have thought, don't nobody think like me. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have these high goals and aspirations, and I, you know, I have dreams of, you know, like even Professor Daniel said, he wanted to get out of the inner city. He wanted to do something with his life.
That's
and
right.
He began to work hard. He went to school. He
yep.
surrounded himself around people.
He did his part.
Yeah, that, you know, that he could see was a role model. And you can go about it doing the right way. Do it the right way.
Thank
you.
You
know, if you want to do just like building a house or anything else, you don't want to build it too fast and you didn't
mm-hmm.
build it right.
Take
you want
time.
The foundation to be set right. And
because the time's going to fly anyway. It's
going
to go by. You know, so don't think so much about, oh, it's going to take forever, because whenever you're looking forward, it always seems like a long time. If you look ahead 5 years, it's going to seem like, oh, my God, that's forever. But if you look back 5 years, it went just like that.
And it's better than not doing anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, you're planting a seed for your future generation.
And you do want to do that. You want to be able to leave something. You know, it's like you don't want to be like that song, what was it, Temptations, Papa Was a Rolling Stone. When he died, all he left us was alone. You know, you want to be able to leave something for future generations and to be able to enhance the quality of your life while you're living it, while you're healed, and while you're healthy enough to take advantage of these, you know, these historic times. I mean, take advantage of it. And if you need a support group, hey, if you don't have one, I invite you to join and hit me up on Facebook, Jawanza for Life. Jawanza is J-A-W-A. N like Nancy, Z like Zebra, A, the numerical number 4, Life, L-I, F like Frank, E, Jawanza for Life, Facebook. Hit me up, okay? And we, you know, you'll be part of another network of people who think, you know, just like the people who you hear come on Set for Life every week. This has truly been an honor to be able to come to you today before you. We don't take this for granted. This is our offering to you, okay? We don't take for granted the fact that you couldn't be doing something else. And we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. And
tune in tomorrow to Jawanza for Life.
Yeah, I'm not going
to
tell you who the guest is going to be. I'm going to surprise you. But I guarantee you that you'll love the guest tomorrow as well. Again, hey, drop us a line. Let us know how you're doing. Hit me up at Jawanza for Life. Okay, that's J-A-W-A-N-Z like Zebra, A, numerical number 4, L-I-F-E. Let us know how you think we're doing. If you got any ideas, you know, any comments or suggestions, we won't know unless you tell us. So, until the next time, you know, hey, think wealth.
And have a beautiful week.
Peace.
Peace.